Welcome to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, proudly presented by Butler Snow, where we cover topics of interest to lawyers handling appellate matters in Texas courts and beyond. This podcast demystifies appellate law and pulls back the curtain on the appellate system through conversations with judges, court staff, and top trial and appellate practitioners. Listen in to discover best practices and tips for successfully presenting your case, managing your docket, and promoting efficiency through legal technology. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Smith and Jody Sanders.
Welcome back to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast. I'm Todd Smith.
And I'm Jody Sanders.
We have as our guest, Osler McCarthy, the staff attorney for public information from the Supreme Court of Texas. Welcome to the podcast, Osler.
Glad to be here.
If you're practicing appellate law in Texas, and even if you don't practice appellate law, you have probably heard Osler's name. Osler is sort of, aside from maybe Chief Justice Hecht, Osler is the voice of the Texas Supreme Court. He communicates on behalf of the court, and many of us get his weekly emails, which contain summaries of the court's opinions and notifies us of the Supreme Court orders every Friday shortly after 9 o'clock a.m. So he's a well-known figure in the appellate community in Texas, and we're so glad, Osler, that you took the time to join us.
Absolutely.
But one thing that we don't get to do, Osler, especially in these times, is we haven't run into you at a function, various places I might see you around town here in Austin. So give our guests the opportunity to get to know you a little bit. Tell us a little bit about where you come from, your educational background, and maybe your early career.
Well, I grew up in Plainview between Lubbock and Amarillo. My father was a OBGYN. In fact, he was the first certified OBGYN, probably from Albuquerque to Fort Worth, just after the war, and graduated from Plainview High School and went to Austin College in Sherman. After Austin College, I went to the University of Missouri, graduate school in journalism, got what I wanted out of Mizzou without the degree, came back to Sherman and was telling the PR director at Austin College how I had a professor at Mizzou, and I was a broadcast major, who told us if we didn't find a broadcast station that cared about, knew what it was doing, then get a job with the newspaper because I'd learn more. And told my friend that, and a moment later, he was on the phone setting up an interview for me at the Sherman Democrat, a paper we used to laugh at when I was living in the dorm. So there I was, a few months later, working at the Sherman Democrat, and spent about 2.5 years at the Democrat, and later went on to Temple as city editor in Temple, working for a friend of mine I worked with at Sherman. Went on to Austin College, went on to Gonzaga to law school because I always wanted to study law. And my advisor at Mizzou was a lawyer journalism professor, and I decided that's what I wanted to do. So I went to Mizzou, left because a friend of mine offered me a job, that one in Temple, and I'm getting all convoluted here, pardon me for that. I went to Temple, city editor, and was hired in Spokane, where, incidentally, Gonzaga had a part-time program day or night, which, as best I could tell, was unique because I could go to school day or night in a part-time program, and that fit newspaper hours. It also, at the time, Spokane paid very well for newspaper work. And so I thought, well, this will be good. I can pay my tuition as I go through. And didn't get started on it before a friend of mine hired me in Kansas City. So I went to Kansas City and spent 6 years, had a great experience, had a great newspaper job, and came back to Spokane when I decided I still wanted to pursue the law degree. So I started part-time, did that for 2 years, decided this was going to take a little bit longer. I was newly married, and this was going to take a little bit longer than I had anticipated. So I quit the newspaper job and finished up almost on time with my class that I entered with, full-time class that I entered with. Took me a summer more. And then I clerked for the Washington State Supreme Court for the Chief Justice and came back to Spokane, set myself up in my basement, and called myself a criminal appellate defense lawyer, and did that for about 3 years, and then decided that I was going to starve. We had a new child, and so I was probably the only person who saw in journalism more profit than there was in the law. So I came back to journalism. A friend of mine hired me in San Bernardino. I was sentenced to 19 months in San Bernardino, Southern California, and fled to the Austin American Statesman. And then when this job was created, interviewed and was hired as the first person in the position, as you had mentioned earlier, Chief Justice Phillips had decided that the court needed somebody to handle public information. He expected this influx of public information requests that never really materialized. And so I decided it was my job to design. And I thought, well, what I needed to do was to try to inform the press about what it was about appellate law and decision making. And so that was the source of the summaries. Problem was that Phillips wanted summaries on everything, so I didn't favor anything. Instead of me making news judgments and summarizing opinions that I felt were newsworthy, I was summarizing everything.
Oh.
And from that, I'd like to say that Bill Powers heard about my summaries and said, "Would you put me on that list?" And that's a bit of an exaggeration, but from there it just took off, and the focus on the press was long since buried. And now I have, as I like to say, 2,600 or 2,800 of my best friends, all by word of mouth.
So you mentioned Bill Powers. So for clarification, you're talking about Bill Powers, who was the dean at UT Law School at that time. Yeah. Okay.
And I had covered at the Statesman, in my last position at the Statesman, I covered the courts, and I got to know Powers through that. And then also my uncle-in-law, my wife's uncle, was Bob Dawson.
Let's see. And Dawson was the author of, I believe it was a big criminal treatise.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are certainly some players in the Austin institutions, you know, UT primarily, but with, obviously Austin then was a little bit smaller town than it is now. And of course, everyone still knows everybody here, seemingly anyway. But I'm curious. So Chief Justice Phillips, I guess there had been some change in the Public Information Act or something, and he was concerned about getting a bunch of PIAs.
They just implemented Rule 12, Rules of Judicial Administration, which was the functional equivalent of the Public Information Act for courts. And things were tense back those days, if they're not still, but the plaintiff's bar, personal injury bar, and the court were at each other's throats. And one of the things I was trying to do is just communicate with both sides and say, this is what the court has decided. Here's some of its reasoning. Here's its holding. And you guys decide for yourselves rather than run with a bottom line holding and start cranking out, at that time, fax missives to protest what the court had decided or applaud what the court had decided.
Attorneys are always trying to figure out the best, most efficient ways to stay on top of their game. Use QuickCheck on Westlaw Edge, a first-of-its-kind intelligent document analysis tool, to discover a new level of confidence. Simply upload a brief, yours or your opponent's, and in just minutes receive a report with warnings for cited authority, recommendations for additional relevant authority, as well as authority that is contrary to what your opponent cited. Improve the quality and thoroughness of your work without sacrificing time with QuickCheck on Westlaw Edge. This was your job to create. Aside from doing opinion summaries, as that evolved, rather than being selective, as you pointed out, to summarizing every opinion from the Texas Supreme Court, what other kinds of things did the job take on as far as duties over time?
Well, the problem with the court, as I came to realize, is that everybody looked at, hey, here's somebody new. Let's give it to Mikey. So I was doing a lot of things that were not public information. My position was shared in the beginning with the Office of Court Administration. So I was doing some PIO stuff for them that I think after 2 years, the half funding that OCA had contributed to my position went away and the court assumed all funding. So, you know, the job has kind of evolved helter-skelter. I have been the court's photographer. I don't know what else, whatever other hats I've worn, a lot of them disparate and having nothing to do with public information. There was one thing, you know, I talked about walking in the door before I could find where the bathrooms were. Somebody said, well, why don't you recruit law clerks? Oh, my God. So I did that for a little while, and then that disappeared. So just whatever Mikey, whatever we want Mikey to do, Mikey can do.
The staff attorney at large with a roving commission.
I guess it is a little tough when you literally you're answering to all nine of the justices, but I suspect you also work very closely with Chief Justice Hecht and with the predecessor chief justices as well.
Yeah.
What is your process for doing the opinion summaries? I know that is kind of the thing that you're most well known for. How do you handle that each week?
Well, this morning, not really well.
We should preface that, Jody, by pointing out that the court is winding up its term and there's a certain amount of pressure on the Supreme Court now that it, for a couple of years below, has cleared its docket of argued cases.
Yeah,
we're recording this in late June, and I don't have it in front of me, but I think the court put out 8 or 9 opinions this morning.
I counted 16 that decided.
Okay.
Including the PCs.
Several of those were PCs that were routine, spun off of NRA Allstate.
Okay.
Yeah, so somewhere around 12, but probably I think 10 of them were significant of, you know, some sort.
So Osler, all that's to say, Osler's been a busy man.
Yes.
For a while, because the court has been trying to get those orders out and those opinions out in the argued cases and the companion cases. And that's been kind of a steady stream over the last several weeks as we've approached summer.
Mm-hmm.
What is the deadline, Osler, by which the court tries to accomplish that? Remind me.
The last Friday of June. So today.
This is it. We're recording this on June
25th.
25th. So by the time you hear this, anyone who's listening, you will know that there will be no more Texas Supreme Court opinions, at least not issued in the ordinary course on Friday orders. Is that right?
No, not on argued cases during the term. You know, if an emergency comes up, then that, of course, will be addressed. You know, at one time, the court issued a school finance case in the middle of summer. Mm-hmm. So it can happen.
That's a pretty exceptional situation, though. School finance, we've talked about that some on this show. That's its own animal. And obviously, you talk about important to the jurisprudence of the state, important to the operation of the state, period. And the court will deviate from its schedule, its ordinary schedule, somewhat to handle a case like that. But I didn't mean to sidetrack Jody's question. I think he had asked about your process for creating those opinion summaries.
It has varied, Jody.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when I tried to basically rework everything that the court it was issued, not so much in my own words, but to really grasp it and try to make it understandable. Now I'm more likely to pick up chunks, put them down in one file, massage them, always looking what I think is just first year law school stuff. Mm-hmm. What's the issue? What are the pertinent facts? What's the holding? How did the court get to its holding? And I'll tend to work on those partly out of habit, some out of necessity. I will work on those generally late at night, Thursday night, sometimes all night. I haven't pulled a true all-nighter in years, but I used to be down there when we had a hand down like we did today, then I would spend all night on it, be down. Nadine would come in, the executive assistant to the court would come in, and there I was still in my clothes from the Thursday before. So that's kind of it. I get the opinions, both the drafts and then the finals, and then the supplemental finals, those that have changes to be made yet on Thursdays. I get them, try to read through them early, but not really start to write until Thursday evening.
Do you do the summaries that show up on like the video arguments, the kind of summary cards that come up before video?
Yes.
For those that have ever watched a live stream Texas Supreme Court argument, maybe you know what I'm talking about, but they're kind of summary cards that introduce the case and just generally what the issue is that's being presented.
One of the things I did when I first started, it's evolved various ways. I print a pamphlet for the courtroom. That's gone away in the last 15 months or so, but I print a pamphlet with a summary of the cases that are being argued. Keep it very brief because it's just an 8x12 folded pamphlet. And on the inside, facing pages, then I'll summarize those cases that are being argued. And that will be picked up then for the video card that you're talking about. Since the pandemic, because there hasn't been oral argument, and there's not an easy way to do that, that's just gone away. And when the court grants a case, then I'll summarize the issues. If I've got time, I'll do some facts just to orient, but generally it's just the issues. And then I pick that up as a place setter for an opinion. And if it looks like issues fell away, then I'll take them away and hold close to what the court has identified as what its concern is and the issues presented.
I know I'm among many, many lawyers who, that's one of the first things I do on Friday morning, is not only will I look at the court's orders, but I've gotten to where I do rely on your summaries. In the old days, I would print, good grief, I would print the opinions and then read through them as I could. But it got to where your opinion summaries were so helpful to me that I was able to not print them anymore. And if there was an opinion that I saw that you had written a summary on that I thought was something I needed to read more closely, I absolutely would do that. But the way that you approach these in terms of laying out the principal issues and the court's holdings and summarizing even the separate writings is, I've found it to be super helpful. And it's quite a service, Osler, that you've done for the lawyers of Texas for all these years.
Well, I've gone back and put it in the beginning, they were very, very brief. And then that sort of grew and grew. And in their growth, it's more a recognition that I'm really talking mostly to lawyers and appellate lawyers so that I'm making them longer than they maybe should be. But I've always tried to, at a glance, give somebody what it is that the case is about. And if you need to go to the opinion, there's the link. You can call it up and check it out. If you need to look at the briefs, there's a link. You can call it up and check them out. If you need to look at the Court of Appeals opinion, I've done that.
I think they're just the right length because I can look at your summary and I can tell you drill right down to it, but you provide enough detail and you've done it for so long and I've seen it for so long that I have a lot of confidence when I read your summaries that you're giving me the accurate reporting of what the case has got going on. Because I'll even offer a little side note here. For a long time going back, to 2007 or so, I used to write a lot of blog posts, and I thought it'd be kind of a cool thing to do is to summarize Texas Supreme Court cases. But then I started paying attention to your summaries, and I thought, oh, OSO's already doing this. Why do I need to do this? Because you were providing a lot of value and really digestible chunks of information in those emails. So I hope nobody's criticizing you for the length of those summaries, because I think you're doing it just right.
No, not really. It's more, you know, I'm a journalist. You can always squeeze things down. I had an editor in Kansas City who said, every story can be a third shorter.
Same is true for a brief.
Yeah.
Or court opinions, for that matter, usually. But
yeah.
All right. Your court, the Supreme Court, does, I think, write consistently crisp opinions. And so there's not a lot of wasted words, but I think that would be one of the challenges. It's kind of like social media, right? When Twitter first came and you were limited to 140 characters per tweet, a lot of people learned to write tweets really concisely. Probably the same principle in your summaries. You've got to really learn how to whittle those opinions down into digestible chunks, as I say. And that's a real skill. It's almost like an editor's pen that you have to break out to do that, I would think.
Yeah. Now, there's definitely a lot of editing that goes in. Part of you talking about tweets, having done a little bit of everything in a newsroom, working on the copy desk and writing headlines, that's poetry and newspaper work, but it's also a good skill to bring over to anything, including the law and legal writing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But speaking of Twitter, too, you do have a Twitter account that you use to publish the court's orders as well, as I recall.
The court has a Twitter account. I had set one up early on. And when the court started, when OCA came and said, well, we've got this Twitter account, do you want it? And I said, no, I've got this one. The only thing I use Twitter for is some breaking news. I don't do opinions on it unless it's breaking. So I use the email in a separate way from Twitter, and don't use Twitter quite as much as maybe modern times would demand.
Well, I think that's debatable.
Well, yeah, there's some truth to that.
Well, I also noticed, though, you, whenever there's a big event or an announcement, I recall getting emails sent out that way. It's separate and apart from the usual format, obviously, of your opinion summaries. But usually when there's maybe a new justice appointed or retirement, or we've had over the years deaths of some of the former justices on the court, and I guess that kind of information also falls within your purview.
Yeah, I've done obituaries, just basically as journalism.
Mm-hmm. And website content, I guess, kind of falls into there as well. Some of the announcements that I see there look like they have your touch on them. How did the pandemic affect what you were doing as the staff attorney for public information? Did it really change your responsibilities much? There was a lot going on, obviously, and the court issued a whole bunch of orders, but the orders process is something different than what you do as staff attorney for public information, right?
Yeah, well, those on emergency orders, in most cases, because they're emergency orders, I've tried to summarize and then keep people up to date with how different orders are changing that address the same topics. Evictions, for instance, eviction protections, pleadings. So it added a new dimension where orders, a new rule that really I thought that the bar needed to know. I would leave them to administrative orders and just let people find them there. That's the reason in my summaries of opinions at the bottom that I'll put a link there to recent administrative orders. People who really want to watch closely will find them there. If it's something that I think more people want to know or should know, then I'll maybe put a summary.
For most clients, a supersedeas bond is something they may need once in a lifetime, and very few surety brokers specialize in supersedeas bonds. If your client needs to stay enforcement of a judgment in Texas, or any other state or federal court, Court Surety Bond Agency is the company to call. Learn more by visiting courtsurety.com today. I don't think I can remember a time where the court had as many administrative orders in such a short time and ones that did so many different things. You think about Supreme Court administrative orders, they're usually pretty bland and don't do a lot, but gosh, we just had a quick succession that was every week or two, it felt like changing the way that we do business, understandably.
Yeah.
Well, and not only the pandemic, but the ransomware attack too, I would imagine threw a real wrinkle in, it certainly threw a wrinkle in the flow of information, as we've talked about on the show before, but I don't know that I have any great appreciation for how that would have affected what you were doing, what was going on there.
Well, a lot of it was technical and a lot of it was OCA jumping in and doing various things. The day of the ransomware attack, I might have been the first person to know about it because I was up at 2:30 in the morning doing what I was doing for May 5th orders that day or whatever, the May 8th orders. And suddenly everything went blank. So I scrambled around, said, well, what's going on here? I was working from home where I mostly work, but I drove down to the office to figure out, okay, is it my connection? Is it my internet service here? And got down there and alerted Chief Justice Heck that something's wrong. And soon thereafter, we discovered how wrong things were. It's often one of the things about my job, it's both frustrating and rewarding. The frustrating part is I hit my send button and I don't know whether anything goes out. Does anybody see what I do? I've been up all night. Do they care? And on the morning of the ransomware attack, some of it was communication was hampered all the way around, but it's like nobody's writing me saying, where are my opinions? And I thought, wait a minute, I've been doing this for 20 years. Nobody gives a shit. I'm thinking I'm communicating important information and nobody's complaining that I don't have my opinions today.
Well, we maybe didn't complain directly to you, but there are many of us who sit at our computer at 8:59 hitting the refresh button going into 9 o'clock. So let me tell you, it is monitored and it's very appreciated when things come out right on time.
That's absolutely true. But that part of it is it's an OCA or a Blake Hawthorne issue, right? If those orders aren't released on time, which I can only recall a few times ever that that's been an issue, but then, of course, I usually know the next thing to look for is OSRA's email coming shortly after 9 a.m. But I'll tell you, I think the person I'm going to speak about won't object to this, but I can think of one lawyer who I used to work with in Dallas who would be responding, letting you know he had missed seeing your weekly orders. And that would be my former boss and mentor, Ben Taylor. I'll call Ben out a little bit for that, and he won't mind.
On occasion, I'll hear from Ben. Same sort of thing.
Ben might actually help you correct some of your grammar or your punctuation, too. People do notice, Osler. I'm here to tell you.
Yeah, we do.
It is
greatly appreciated.
I've said it before, but I'll say it again. It is quite a service that you provide to the lawyers of Texas, and I think you do have a skill in distilling down the essence of those opinions into bite-sized chunks, as I've suggested earlier, which is extremely valuable. And I think that journalism background really has to help you accomplish that, because this is something that I don't think a non-lawyer could do as effectively either. I mean, having the dual background of journalism and law, it seems like you're well-suited to that set of responsibilities and created a job that's worked well for you all these years.
Hell, Todd, you're going to have me crying here about the whole idea of leaving. what am I doing?
Well, I don't mean to make you cry, Osler, but I think now would probably be the appropriate time. I think you've got a little announcement to make about your future. And I don't want to steal your thunder at all. I want you to let folks know in your own words what you've got coming up.
I've been retiring now for 2 years. The first time was I was looking at August of 2019 and decided I'm not quite ready. And then it was going to be August of 2020. And I decided we're in the middle of a pandemic. I would imagine it would be hard to hire somebody, anybody in a pandemic, but certainly one that needs to circulate the court and know something about the court, and you know, when most of the court's at home working out of their home offices. So it finally came down to, largely because of the pandemic, that I would see it through to the end of August. It looked like things were going to relax. I've got a couple of possibilities in journalism, but the first thing I'm going to do, hope to do, is I'm rebuilding an airplane, and I want to do as much of it by myself. I've even thought about going to San Antonio Community College to take aeromechanics just because. But I've had an airplane for college and kids. College expenses for those kids has been sitting on the ground for 20 years, and I'm anxious to fly it a little bit while I still can. And so I'm rebuilding a 68 Cessna Cardinal, and I'm about to take my wings over to a guy to repair them because they're leaking. Take it over to Eagle Lake to a guy, and I hope that maybe I can do most of that work myself, but I just need to get it done.
Just as Paul Green is not the only budding aviator at the Texas Supreme Court, or was.
I like to say Judge Green is a neophyte when it comes to flying. Although I've flown with him a couple of years ago, he had me hold the controls, and I think he figured, oh, I wasn't holding a steady course enough. So he took it over.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic project. And you mentioned before we started recording that you might be interested in getting into podcasting. So we'd certainly welcome you into the world of podcasting with open arms if you chose to do that.
Well, you know, one thing, and it goes back to Twitter. I get a lot of Twitter on subscribing to a lot of Twitter feeds. And other than to rebuild my plane, I really need to take some time and think through some pressing issues for me and pressing issues for American society. We've gone through something in the last actually 4 years, but certainly the last year of those 4 years that's just been unprecedented assault on democracy, I believe. And I need to think about that. So I've thought about doing some Twitter. The other thing is that podcasting, maybe along those lines, maybe along the law, but also in my quest to rebuild this airplane are two or three or four coffee table book ideas that I don't believe I'm going to make any money off of, but I've got some ideas that would be fascinating. And one, for instance, is World War II training fields across the Southwest. And if I can find places where there's still a visual representation and probably interview some people who weren't learning to fly outside Pecos, for instance, but were around as kids when the B-29s and the B-17s were flying overhead, I think I can put something together. And podcasting could lend itself to promotion, if nothing else, but it might be fun. I'm just looking for creative ideas.
I imagine, you know, after all the years of sort of being the outward voice of the court, it'll be kind of fun to pursue your own projects and tell your own stories.
Well, we're certainly sorry to see you go, because you've just become part of that institution. And I sure hope the court appreciates, and I'm sure that it does, everything you've done over the last 24 years in that position. I can't believe it's been that long.
21. Don't get me older than I am.
Oh, God. 21. Okay. Well, and we've talked here before. I don't math too well, so forgive my error there. But I have to ask you one thing that we haven't covered yet, as we start winding down, and that is about the sign-off on your email. There's a certain Spanish phrase there that I see all the time I'm not a Spanish speaker, so I think I actually did go and look it up once. It's A Luchar Por Todos.
Yes.
And you want to explain that for us, those of us that don't quite get it?
It's something I started to throw in after the pandemic. And we're all in this. Basically, we're all in this together.
Gotcha.
So.
Well, it's colorful, and I sure appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I'll just give you a nod, too, for the historical blurbs. You know, if you read these emails, Osler usually puts in something relevant to that week or that day in history. So it's always a lesson. You know, when I open one of those emails.
I haven't done any of those in months now. Some of it was just pandemic. It was just wearing.
Sure.
I've always done, though, that started me working, except for when we're issuing a great lot of opinions, that started me working in the middle of the night because I didn't believe the state of Texas was paying me to do little historical asides. And so during the pandemic, I said, you know, I'll get back to it, and I will when opinions have stopped and I'm still sending out orders on Fridays. But that's been fun. That's just been a creative outlet. It started 10 years ago, maybe not that long, but I just got bored sending out summer orders. One after the other, it's just linked there. And I thought, well, I got to entertain myself some way, maybe entertain some other people. And so I tried to do a little sense of humor and some perspective that might mean something, as you said, for that day, but also lessons of history.
We're getting towards the end of our time that we had allotted, and we want to let you get back to your Friday. But before we go, it's always been our tradition to ask our guests if they have a tip or a war story that they'd like to share.
The tip for appellate lawyers is don't write so bloatedly. Don't write with acronyms or initialisms because they are death to a reader who is not very closely following your topic. And that's going to include almost any judge, whether they'll admit it or not, because they use them all the time. It's a real irritation. You'll see that I'm not going to, except for things like FBI or HUD, maybe, I'm not going to use initialisms because all cap letters, research shows, are just deadly for reading and for comprehension. They're just death to understanding. That, dummy subjects, it is, there are those sorts of things, just flotsam in the language. It shouldn't be. And a lot of that stuff that I picked up as an editor and preached as an editor and preached as a journalism instructor and then picked up from Brian Garner. So we write too much. We use too many words. And we don't appreciate that to communicate, we need to do some different things the lawyers don't want to do. And we learned legalese in law school. And that's the beginning of a problem.
Well, that's a great point.
War stories, I'll tell you one. I was trying to think, you know, that one war story was Tom Phillips padding around in his sock feet all over the court. When I first got there, I thought, what is all this? And then I came to appreciate that's Tom Phillips. There was a time when Chief Justice Jefferson was coming back from a conference on a Saturday, and he needed to make a wedding of a law school friend in Round Rock. And so he asked me, would I mind picking him up because his car was at the court? And I said, sure, I'd be glad to do that. So I picked him up. His plane was running late, and I had my dog in the car. So we picked him up, and I said, I'll just drive you straight to Round Rock, and you're not going to have time to go by and get your car. And he said, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. So I took off Round Rock on what then was a relatively new toll road, 130. So we're going along, and he's over in the right seat of the car changing clothes because putting on a suit and tie, come in wearing jeans. So dog's in the back seat, and dog's name is Bacchus. I pulled him up to the church, and off he goes, and all was accomplished. Several months later, I sent him an email. I said, Chief, I've got a call from a reporter. Winston says he's got pictures that look like they were taken from a toll camera of you in your underwear in a car speeding down State Highway 130. And he writes back, he said, "Wait a minute. Don't bring those things to me by email. Come down here and talk with me." You know, you could hear in the email response. Then a moment later, he says, "Wait a minute. No, wait. That was when you picked me up at the airport." And I said, I don't remember that. He said, yeah, you had Bacchus in the car with us. I said, don't remember. So I came down. I came down to his office. He's, you know, he's red in the face, angry that I would do this. then he realized he'd been had.
Well, we don't hear too many war stories about Chief Justice Jefferson, so it's good to have one. And who's in a better position to tell it than you?
We really appreciate your time and coming on and sharing stories with us.
Well,
that's right.
I enjoyed it. Other than Jody, you're aside for business. I wouldn't want to edit this thing. So good luck to both of you.
No, this is great.
No, we're so grateful for you doing this, Osler. We certainly wish you the best going forward and keep in touch with the Lawyers of Texas. I know we'll enjoy hearing from you.
Yeah. I hope that maybe I'll make the appellate conference this September.
Civil appellate.
I was hoping that maybe I'd get a chance to pick up some CLA and see some folks for a last time.
Well, and thankfully, it's going to be live and in person.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, presented by Butler Snow. If you're enjoying the show, please recommend it to your colleagues or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate everyone who has rated the show and otherwise supported us so far. To stay in touch, suggest topics, ask questions, or express interest in coming on the show, visit us online at texapplawpod.com or tweet us at texapplawpod. The views expressed by the participants on this podcast are their own and not those of their law firms, courts, or employers. Nothing you hear on this show establishes an attorney-client relationship or is legal advice.